From two beautifully scenic and historic locations, the Hudson Valley, New York, and Willow, Alaska, this is The Side Vibe, brought to you by Dog Works Radio. Your hosts are author, journalist, and photographer, the Five Sides mom, Dorothy Wills Raftery, and Dog Works Radio executive producer, canine behaviorist, trainer, and lead musher of Team Aneke, Robert Forto. The Side Vibe is all about the magnificent breed of the Siberian Husky. From training to grooming, and for those who show and breed, from parenting to playing and rescuing huskies in need, whether mushing over snow-covered trails or lounging on tropical shores, even for Hollywood sides on the big silver screen and so very much more. If it's about a Siberian Husky, we'll chat about it here.
Hello, everybody, and this is Dorothy Wills Raftery, host of The Side Vibe, and I want to welcome you to our very special post-Junior Iditarod wrap-up episode featuring our sponsor, Junior Musher, 17-year-old Houston High School senior Nicole Forto of Team Aneke, and that's my usual co-host, Robert Forto's daughter, and they're from Willow, Alaska. And we were so proud she was wearing our Five Sides patch on her team parka this year. We had spoken with Nicole prior to the race, and today we're catching up with her to see what it was like out on the trail for this veteran second junior Iditarod race, which is also her last one as a junior musher. So it's a little bittersweet, I would imagine. Hi, Nicole, and welcome back.
Hi, thank you for having me back. I'm excited.
I know, I'm always excited to talk to you. And first up, I want to say congratulations on finishing the junior Iditarod. What an accomplishment.
Thank you. Like I was telling you before, I had a really good time this year, better than last year. It was really good.
That's wonderful. I can't wait to talk to you a little bit about how it was out there. I mean, it was quite exciting watching along on the GPS. You know, you find yourself yelling at the computer screen, like, go, Nicole. You know, the race, now I know the race had a few changes in the beginning, and they moved the start date from February 28th, which was the original date, to March 1st, and also moved the location, all due to weather. I guess you guys had some unseasonably warm temperatures, and then I understand there were some icy conditions, and this is what resulted in the changes?
Mm-hmm. It was extremely icy here in Willow. It still is. I feel like it's getting worse before it's going to get better.
Oh, no. I always joke. I mean, well, I was sort of joking. I mean, down here, we're not quite used to those temperatures, but we've had those, you know, polar freezes down here while you guys are up there with our 40-degree temperatures. And, you know, that's, you guys need the snow and the cold. Was it nerve-wracking for you at all to have these last-minute changes?
Before the race, it was nerve-wracking because I knew the new trail was going to be a lot of hills, and my dogs don't have any hill training. So I was really nervous on if I was even going to finish, let alone, you know, whether I was coming in last or not. So it was actually pretty scary to, you know, sit there and think, well, I don't have hill training. All this trail is hills. Oh, my goodness, what's going to happen?
So how was the trail this year, and how did things work out for you?
Well, there was snow, not ice, so that was number one best thing. And there was definitely a lot of hills, a lot of long, gradual incline uphills, and I thought, oh my gosh, dogs are not going to make this. They can't do it. They don't have hill training. They go up maybe 50-foot hills, and that's it, where these were, like, climbing 3,000-feet hills. So At first, at the starting line, you know, butterflies of being really nervous for my dogs, let alone for myself. But as, you know, the trail went on, they didn't stop. They never dropped under their 8 mile an hour, which is what we train at. So I was very proud of them. They never stopped pulling up the hills. They just kept going. And I never once had to get off my sled and run next to them on the line to encourage them to go. They just kept going, and I helped them with my ski pole, and they made it up every single one of them. So it was actually really good. I'm very proud of them.
Oh, I imagine so. That's really wonderful. Now, how does it feel to have your second junior Iditarod race under your belt?
It feels kind of bittersweet because it was my last year, so obviously, you know, I can't race in junior races anymore, and I more than likely won't be running in long-distance adult races. I'd probably be taking out our younger puppy team on sprint races next year, but it was really nice, actually, to, you know, be able to experience it and be a part of the whole Junior Iditarod family, and I've already decided that I'm more than likely going to volunteer help for Junior Iditarod next year, or any junior mushers that, you know, need advice or anything. I kind of offered that up at Junior Iditarod for them to send junior mushers my way or use me for volunteering. So it's over for me for racing, but Junior Iditarod's still going to be, you know, a part of my life.
I think that's wonderful. And to become a mentor to other young mushers coming up, I think that's a wonderful thing to do, and volunteer your time that way. I mean, they're going to be very lucky to have you on board in that capacity. So I think that's great. And we'll definitely keep talking to you, you know, about your experiences now on the other side of the sled. Now obviously your dogs did really well. Did you wind up taking Frosty and Ty-Ty as your lead dogs?
I took Frosty, but not Ty-Ty. Ty-Ty gets really, really tired on hills, so she got opted out, and I took Frosty and Shock were my two leaders for the starting line, but things change, and Shock ended up being put back into swing and team, and Aussie, one of our kind of goofy leaders who doesn't really lead, but he can do it, got put up with Frosty, and he helps finish the race.
Now, did you, other than the hills that you were talking about, which, you know, once they switched it, you knew that this was going to be the case, did you encounter anything unexpected out on the trail this year? And what do you feel your biggest challenge out there turned out to be?
I've never seen a porcupine before, and I saw a porcupine. So that was
up close and personal.
To say the least. It was interesting because the Denali Highway, it's a highway that they close during winter, so there's snow on it, and their typical highway, you know, it dips down on the sides, and there was this tree that, you know, the top was basically level with the road, and there's a porcupine just chilling in the tree, and Aussie, who was in lead with Frosty at the time, saw it and tried to jump off of the road to get this porcupine, and pulled Frosty up off all fours into the air and tried to get this porcupine, and it was all Frosty could do to keep him on the road instead of falling down the side of the road.
Oh, my goodness. And, I mean, I know having huskies, they love those smaller animals. So, you know, I always say that the one that we have, Bandit, her attention span is very brief. And I said, no, there's no way we'd have to put blinders on like they do with horses, because whatever she sees, it's like, whoop, you know, you go with it. So I can't even imagine what it's like having a whole team of dogs and a sled when one dog decides, hey, that porcupine looks interesting. So is it hard to keep them then and get them back on path when one decides, like, something out there is interesting?
A big part of it comes into how you train. So if you're training and you're not seeing a lot of wildlife, or you see wildlife and, you know, you don't talk to your dog when it happens, a lot of the times on races when it happens is the dogs go after it even more so than when in training. But with us, we see a lot of moose, so like even worse than small little rodents. So my dogs, all of them, team and leaders included, know leave it and on by for wildlife. And I had Sydney, who's kind of one of our older, more experienced leaders in swing, and she helped Frosty, you know, keep Aussie on track for going after the porcupine. So it was really good because having a dog that knows what it's supposed to be doing on the team and helps, you know, your younger ones that are a little bit more goofy, a little more, oh, let's go check out that squirrel or this tree, or let's pee on this snow mound. So it's really nice having that balance of young, where they are really speedy, and then older, so they're more experienced and help keep the younger ones on track.
it really does embrace the whole team concept, working all together like that, Musher and all the different dogs. And, it's really fascinating to hear how, they all work together to stay on that trail. Now, your dogs, Frosty and Tolliver, from what I understand, they're now running on the Iditarod with Hugh Neff. Is that right?
Yep. He messaged me first thing when I got back and told me congratulations and asked me how the boys did. And he, at the ceremonial start yesterday, he had Frosty in swing. And I'm not sure if he's going to start out with him in lead or not, but both Frosty and Tolliver are going to be running on the Iditarod team for Hina.
Well, that is really cool. So we'll definitely be watching and cheering them both on. I mean, you must feel very proud of them now, even more so.
I am. I'm especially proud of Frosty because he came to us with Tolliver, and Tolliver was supposed to be his buddy at Team Aneke to help train him up to be a leader. And what happened was that Frosty ended up getting put in swing a lot of the times because he gets so distracted because he's so young still, and he wasn't quite grasping it. And I finally said that enough was enough, and I put him up with Ty Ty, and it was like brand new dog. And so I did a lot of his leader training. So for him to make the Iditarod team, it's a big accomplishment, not only for me, but kind of a proud mom moment, because I, helped guide him to it, and so did Ty Ty. So we're both really proud of him.
Oh, that is so great. I mean, I actually had the goosebumps. That's so great. I'm we're right there with you. And, big hugs to you over the phone. That's an amazing job and a super accomplishment. And, it's going to give the Iditarod even a little bit more special of a push to be watching now, to keep an eye out for Frosty and Tolliver. That's really wonderful. Great job, Nicole, really. Now, there's a 10-hour mandatory layover. Can you tell us what do you and your dogs do during this time? Like, some folks have asked, do you mingle and hang out with the other mushers on the trail, or are you on your own and have, a set-up camp that's just specifically for you and your team?
I froze my butt off because it was, like, negative 16.
I don't know how you do it. I really don't. I admire the mushers for doing this. I mean, I like the cold, but that's cold.
But no, we're basically, it's kind of like a lane situation, like a parking lot, so to speak.
Okay.
But for dog teams, so you're all around each other, with the other dog teams, so you're not specifically in one spot only for you by yourself. So I came in and we pulled off to the side because Alpine Creek Lodge is basically has a driveway and a parking lot, so we were on either side of the little driveway. And the first thing that I do is I give my dogs a snack of salmon or beef. This year it happened to be salmon. That way it'll hold their tummies off till I can get the meat melted and fed to them for their bigger meal. And the nice thing about having a 10-hour layover is you can take the time to give them a snack, and then feed them. You don't have to rush to get everything done. And so you can sleep like a 6-hour layover is. So it was really nice because we had hot water this year, and we didn't last year, so I didn't even have to bother melting and boiling snow. So it was a lot faster, and so I was standing around waiting, for the meat to melt with the hot water, thinking, well, usually this is when I'm melting snow, and now I have nothing to do. So it was definitely a lot different. But
now some people ask too, when you say sleep, how does a junior musher sleep on a layover?
I personally either sleep in my sled or next to one of my dogs. This year, I slept in my sled. For me, I put a tarp down, and then usually I just lay down in my parka and sleep, and usually it's plenty warm enough. But because it was so cold this year, for the first time ever camping, I slept in my sleeping bag. So that was interesting. I was in my sleeping bag, and then I put my parka on top of my sleeping bag and rolled the top of my sleeping bag so there was no air pockets, and I just laid down and, like, curled in a ball, tried to warm up, and the whole time one of my wheel dogs, Valdez, who was his first time camping, would get up and turn around and then sit back down, get up and turn around, sit back down. And I could hear him, you know, moving the line and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I would just be, like, almost asleep, and then he'd do it. So it was quite a battle for a few hours. And then finally Trapper, who was next to him, kind of growled at him and yelled at him basically to lay down and go to bed. And then he finally settled down.
Oh, that's good. It's funny. It's like having a bunch of kids, you know. It's quite cute, the little personalities that they have. And, okay, maybe not so cute when you're trying to catch them asleep, but, you know, just hearing about the different personalities is really, I find it very fascinating. And I feel like we have a couple, do we have a couple extra guests here with us today? Who's in the background with you?
That is Naya.
Aww.
She's a camp dog here at Alaska Dog Works, and all she wants to do is be out of her kennel over here with me, but then that makes all the other dogs bark. So,
see, and I thought she wanted to get on air with us.
She's stuck over there.
Now, there's some amazing photos your dad has posted over on the Team Inneke Facebook page, and you know, we've been sharing them as well. And one in particular, Jeff Schultz shot of you out on the trail with the snowy mountains behind you, and it's just gorgeous. And I have to ask you, what goes through your mind when you're out there and it's just you and the sled dogs and all this beauty around you?
I think the biggest thing is, like, even if you take pictures of it, it's definitely something that you have to experience to really, you know, understand its beauty. Because I know everyone saw that picture, oh my gosh, that's so pretty, you know, background of mountains, covered in snow, dog sled. But it's definitely something that, you know, you have to be there. It takes your breath away. Just, you know, being surrounded by mountains like that, being out there with your dogs, you know, surviving when a lot of people don't even take their house dogs on walks. So it's definitely a once-in-a-lifetime experience that is definitely hard to come by. So,
and how are you feeling when the finish line came into view?
I honestly thought I was farther out. So I came over the crest of that last little hill, and I saw all these cars, and I was like, what? Why are there cars here? And I was like, oh, it's the finish line. I am a lot faster than I thought.
Oh. So now I know graduation from high school is coming, and then you're moving to Anchorage to go to the University of Alaska to study marine biology, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you sum up for us what your experience has been like growing up in a mushing family and having this wonderful opportunity of racing in the Iditarod, not once, but twice?
There's a lot of responsibility behind it. Like, I know a lot of kids that race junior Iditarod or just run dogs in general, they don't run their own dogs. They usually rent dogs from other kennels, or they have handlers that run their dogs for them. And at Team Inneke, I'm our handler. So I run dogs for myself as well as helping my dad run his team. And this year, it became a lot of me handling for myself, hooking up the dogs, running 4 hours after school, coming home, feeding them, and then doing my homework. So this year it became a lot of me doing independent stuff. So a huge thing was responsibility, first and foremost, and time management, being able to, you know, get a four-hour run in, get the dogs fed, and still do my homework and still pass my classes without pulling my hair out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think mushing, most definitely, especially not just, you know, being a musher or being just a handler, it teaches you a lot of responsibility and being able to, you know, handle really stressful situations and still, you know, get through it and push through it without pulling your hair out and losing it over the stress and, oh, I have to get this done, but then I really have to get this done. And so it helps a lot with time management, especially. And so I'm looking forward to being able to go to college and not have to stress out about time management, because, you know, I've experienced having to really time manage and get everything done in only a few hours of daylight.
Yeah, I think you have the time management down, you know, that and multitasking, which, you know, both of those things are fantastic life lessons, both in college life and post-college life as well, once you're out there working. And I think those are two things that you are very capable of handling, you know, so I think that's going to give you a little step up there, you know, and allow you to focus on the things that you need to focus on, which is, I mean, it really is a great experience. There's a lot of responsibility, but I think that plays into some really, truly valuable life lessons. Well, I have to ask you, what was the first thing that you did when the race was over? You know, like the ball players, I went to Disneyland. So what did Nicole Fordo do when she was done?
Well, I had a dog in the sled bag. And so first thing I did was I got to get her looked at. So, like, automatically, I stopped, set my hook, didn't really care that I had to do the mandatory gear check. Like, first and foremost priority was to get her out of the bag and get her looked at by the vet. So, when I stopped, I saw the finish line. I told Shock, it was Shock who was in the bag. I told her to wake up. She was dead tired. She was asleep on the hood of my parka. She had buried her face in my fur and just passed out. So, told her to wake up. I pulled her out of the bag, and then she got looked at. And so my first priority was the dogs. It wasn't like, oh, I'm done. I can get out of these clothes. I'm done mushing. Yay, last race. You don't have to do it anymore. It was definitely first and foremost the health of my dogs.
Well, what happened to her that she wound up being in the sled bag?
I had a tangle, basically, because my leaders decided they wanted to go back to the checkpoint 5 to 10 miles after we left the checkpoint. So they turned around, they got the team tangled, so I had to pull them out, and she got, not necessarily attacked, but she got bit by one of the dogs behind her, and I didn't know it was as bad as it was because she didn't act like it hurt, she didn't cry, she, you know, kept running. She ran. She ended up running another 40 miles, and then she lost her collar, poor thing. She lost her collar when all of this happened. So I had to make her a makeshift vet wrap collar so she would have something there to attach her to a neckline. But after about 40 miles, she was just exhausted. But she was also the youngest on my team for this year, and she has never done any hills. The rest of the dogs have done hills before. A lot of them were previous Iditarod dogs, so a lot of them, you know, knew what they were supposed to be doing. But she was exhausted. I'm sure her leg hurt a little bit, so I put her in the bag, and a lot of the times dogs don't want to be in the bag, so the whole time they're doing is trying to get out of the bag, and she wasn't. She immediately just laid down, started falling asleep. That's how I knew she was done. She couldn't go any farther. So, good thing I had 4 of our biggest dogs on my team because they kept the team going, kept the team pulling up the last few hills that we had left. So, it definitely wasn't necessarily a setback having her in the bag, but it wasn't, you know, what I wanted in the end. I wanted to finish with all of my dogs being healthy and on the line, but I'd much rather her have been in the bag, you know, make sure she didn't get any worse injuries or exhaustion or heat exhaustion or any of that. So it was definitely an experience that I've never had to do before, but it worked out.
See, that's a lot of things I think people don't think about that happens out there. Like you're talking about getting tangled, and you're so calm about it. You're talking about getting tangled and the dog's getting into a scuffle. And, you know, of course, now you're a dog down because it's injured and making a makeshift collar because, you know, of course they need it in order to run. And it's just, you know, from a person that doesn't do this, to me, I find that absolutely amazing. And you're doing all this out in the trail and still finishing the race. I mean, that's really a lot of hard work and a lot of things that pop up along the way that you don't expect. And I have to ask, how is she? Is she good? Is she okay?
Yeah, she's much better now. She's in the house recovering. She had a few bite marks that were a little bit deep on her back leg, and she's got medicine for an infection just in case, and otherwise she's good. She runs around and jumps just like normal. So
Well, that's really good to hear. Now, you know, Nicole, I always love speaking with you. You're a wonderful role model to other youth. And to wrap up today's post Junior Iditarod show, I wonder if you can just kind of tell us what the Junior Iditarod and mushing means for you.
It's definitely more than just a racing competition, because I'm very competitive, and I know a lot of my standings for racing, because I usually come in last, doesn't really show that I'm so competitive I have to come in first, but it actually has showed me, you know, that, you know, winning isn't really everything, and that, you know, whether you're first or you're in the middle of the pack or dead last, it doesn't matter. What matters is that you're still a winner in your dog's eyes, and I'm still always going to be a winner in my dog's eyes, same as they can come in last, they can be the slowest team out there, and I'm still going to think that they're winners, because mushing isn't necessarily a team sport. You're not out there with other mushers, you know, trying to get to a finish line together. You're out there by yourself with your dogs. You and your dogs is it for you. So it's definitely showing you that you have to have a bond, and like allow yourself to have a bond with dogs or even people, that, you know, you have to be able to trust someone out there, because your dogs are your barrier between life and death. If they stop running, you're stuck out there. Like, you can't force them to run. It's a long way from home. I don't think you're going to be walking. So you got to be able to trust your dogs, and they have to be able to trust you. So that a lot of the time is why I spend so much time in the kennel, just sitting with leaders or team dogs or wheel dogs, because it helps them know that you're not just standing on the back of the runners expecting them to do all the work. And I think that ends up being a lot of the problem with kids and adults who don't run their own dogs or run someone else's dogs, because other people are showing your dogs that they can have a bond with them and that they can trust them out on the trail, when it really needs to be you. So I really think that, like, what I'm going to take away from Junior Iditarod or mushing in general is definitely being able to have that bond with your dogs, or even a bond with people, in that sense that, you know, sometimes it's more than about coming in first and getting that top spot. It's definitely about, you know, the journey to get there.
Yeah, that's wonderful, wonderful, you know, advice and just a really wonderful sentiment. And it's always a pleasure talking to you. And I also want to tell you, thank you very much for bringing our book and carrying our patch with you. It was very exciting on this end. And, you know, the mom and the journalist and the husky parent in me is so proud of you. And I know we'll have you back to talk to you more when you're, you know, working with the Junior Iditarod as a volunteer. I think that's fantastic. I just want to really thank you and congratulate you. That's a huge accomplishment, and it's always a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I've got a sponsorship gift coming your way within the next week or so from something that also traveled on the trail other than your book.
That's so sweet. My gift was actually being able to be part of it with you. So, but thank you very much. You know, that's really wonderful. I mean, it was a gift to be part of this, and, you know, in a different aspect other than just reporting on it, but really getting to feel like we were in the sled with you. I just want to tell listeners
nice.
I'm sorry, what was that?
It was nice.
It was great. It was a lot of fun. And, you know, lots of luck in everything you do. Lots of luck. You know, congratulations on your upcoming graduation, and lots of luck in college. And I know we'll be talking and, you know, definitely following what's coming up next for you. And be sure to tell your mom and dad hi for me, too.
Thank you.
I want to let our listeners and readers know they can read more about Nicole's racing journey for the Junior Iditarod with Team Inneke over on their Facebook page of the same name, and also at teaminneke.com. And don't forget to check out my The Side By pre-race interview with Nicole on dogworksradio.com. And it's also available on iTunes. And there's a nice blog article over on Nicole over on my 5sides.blogspot.com. Just scroll down, look for the February 28th, 2015 post. And I want to thank all our listeners for joining us. And, Nicole, it's always a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Take care.